But why didn't they try to contact us? If they can pick up our radio and video, why didn't they call us? I'll have to ask Audrey about that. Brandon shook his head. It's all just too damned convenient. A planet just like Earth, human beings, we can breathe their air and eat their foods. It's uncanny. It gives me the creeps, kind of. Jordan said nothing. Tell me the truth, Jordy. Doesn't all this bother you? Doesn't it worry you? Jordan thought about it as he looked into his brother's troubled eyes and found that the truth startled him. Bran, the truth is that I feel as if I've just arrived home. Rebellion. Jordan awoke and stared at the ceiling for long, languorous moments. Morning sunlight slanted through the room's one window. A bird, a winged creature about the size of a hummingbird, with feathers gleaming like jewels, was flitting back and forth up near the ceiling. Bug catcher? Jordan wondered. His bed was one of the most comfortable he'd ever slept in. It seemed to mold itself to his body shape. He knew he had dreamt, but he couldn't remember what his dreams were about. Probably better that way, he thought. He rose, showered, then shaved with implements neatly laid out on the bathroom cabinet top. His pencil-thin mustache seemed a bit less ragged than it had appeared a few days ago. Three ankle-length robes hung in the bedroom closet, all in the same bluish-gray tone. Underwear in the bureau drawer, together with slipper socks that had padded soles. They all fit reasonably well, although the underpants felt looser than Jordan would have preferred. So they know my approximate size, he thought, but not my precise preferences. Brandon was already in the sitting room, wearing his own slacks and wrinkled shirt from the day before, in thoughtful conversation with Paul Longyear. It's just plain impossible, the lean-faced biologist was saying. I spent half the night running a statistical analysis of the likelihood of a biosphere being so exactly like Earth, and the program kept blowing up in my face. Everything goes to infinity. It's just impossible. Brandon made a sour face at the image on the wall screen. Paul, you know there are lies, damned lies, and statistics. It doesn't matter what the computer program says. The planet is here. It exists. How can it be so much like Earth? Maybe Earth-like planets are commonplace. For all we know, come on, Brandon, Longyear interrupted. Out of the thousands of exoplanets that have been discovered, this one individual planet is a duplicate of Earth, an exact duplicate. Not entirely exact, Brandon said. With human beings living on it? Jordan had never seen the normally imperturbable, stolid Longyear so worked up. His hair, normally braided in a neat queue, looked frayed, hanging down over his shoulders in careless disarray. His dark eyes glittered with suspicion. Or is it fear? Jordan asked himself. Fear of the unknown. Fear that we're finding ourselves pretty ignorant compared to Audrey's people. It exists, Brandon repeated. It's real, no matter what the theories or the statistics may say. Have you considered, Longyear said slowly, as if trying to calm himself, that everything you're seeing is an illusion, a trick? Maybe they can manipulate your senses so that you see what they want you to see. Brandon rolled his eyes toward the ceiling. Then, listen, Paul, the food I ate last night wasn't an illusion. It gave me a gas attack. I've been burping and farting all damned night. Jordan laughed aloud as his brother abruptly ended the link and Longyear's image on the wall screen winked off. Really? The food gave you gas? Brandon grinned slyly. A little. Not as bad as I made out to Paul. He shook his head. He thinks they're manipulating our minds, that all this is just an illusion. It could be. Gas and all. Get real, Jordy. Is that possibility any less real than the idea that this planet is a natural duplicate of Earth, down to an intelligent race that exactly resembles us? Before Brandon could reply, a fluting musical tone filled the room. Turning, Jordan saw that their front door was glowing with a pulsating light. Doorbell? He wondered as he rushed to the door. It slid open at the touch of his finger. Aditi stood in the corridor, smiling at him. She wore chocolate brown shorts and a lighter short-sleeved blouse. Her hair, the color of autumn leaves, was nicely tousled. "Welcome," said Jordan, delighted. Then he noticed an orange-furred cat-like creature slinking around Aditi's ankles, looking up at him with big, bright, saucer-shaped, curious eyes. "Welcome to both of you." Aditi glanced down at the animal.
"Sleen is a pet. She's very quiet. You don't mind if she accompanies us?"
"Not at all. Come on in."
"The robe fits you,"
she said as she stepped into the sitting room.
"I'm relieved. I wasn't certain we had the right measurements for you. We only had an hour or so, and the remote measuring system can be, well, less than exact."
"The system worked beautifully. The robe is very comfortable," Jordan said, ushering her in with a sweep of his arm. Aditi said,
"I thought we'd have some breakfast and then go to see the farms."
"Fine," he said, "although I should speak with the people on the ship first. Why don't you and Brandon go to the restaurant, and I'll join you in a few minutes." She looked slightly disappointed, but said,
"Very well."
Brandon offered his arm and gallantly led her out of the suite. The furry pet trailed after them, tail held high. Jordan stood in the middle of the sitting room, wondering if he'd just made a grievous mistake. The wall screen was wide enough to show Thornberry, Hazard, and Meek sitting side by side at one of the wardroom tables. They looked grim, like three judges about to pronounce a death sentence. "We've reviewed the mission protocol," Hazard said, without preamble. "There's nothing in it that covers the situation we're in." With an amused smile, Jordan said, "I should think not. But we can't all go down to the surface, Jordan. The protocol specifies that there has to be at least a skeleton crew aboard the ship at all times." "That could be handled by robots, couldn't it, Mitch?"
"It could," said Thornberry.
But Hazard said, "The protocol says crew members, not robots." "How many would constitute a skeleton crew?"
"Three at least," said Hazard.
"So, seven of you can come down and join Bran and me here." Meek spoke up.
"Not there where you are. Not in their city."
"Why not?"
Thornberry said, "We thrashed this out last night, Jordan. We've come to the conclusion that we should set up a base camp for ourselves, just as we planned to do before we knew that the aliens existed."
Jordan felt slightly nettled. "But why go to the trouble of setting up a camp when you can live here in comfort, even luxury?"
"Mission protocol," said Hazard rigidly.
"But..." Meek pointed a lean finger and said,
"We've decided it will be much safer for us to set up our own base and not be in the hands of these strangers."
"Don't you think that's a little, well, overly cautious?" Jordan asked. Thornberry smiled placatingly.
"Look, Jordan, these folks may be grand and wonderful people, but we don't know that for certain now, do we?"
"They've certainly treated Bran and me very handsomely."
"Yes, surely they have. But there's nothing wrong with being just a teeny bit careful, is there?"
Before Jordan could answer, Meek blurted,
"Safety first. Fools rush in, but we're not going to be foolish, no matter what you say."
"Good Lord," Jordan thought, "I have a rebellion on my hands." Hazard looked grimly adamant. "Look, Jordan, we're on our own here. The messages we're sending back to Earth take more than 8 years to get there, and another 8 years for them to respond. We'll get no help from home."
"But we're not under any threat. Audrey and his people have been more than kind to us." "We have no idea of what their motivations are," Meek said, almost vehemently, "or their intentions. I, for one, have no desire to live among them. Not until we learn much more about them. Much more."
"We've decided that's our best course of action," Hazard said.
"I see," said Jordan. Trying to buy time so he could think the situation through, he asked, "Have you decided where you'll set up your camp?"
"In the clearing where the rocket planes put down," Hazard replied. "It's close enough to their city to be convenient, and..."
"And far enough away to give us a measure of safety," Meek added.
Jordan saw that Thornberry wasn't wearing his usual slight smile. "Mitch, do you feel the same way?" Looking uncomfortable, Thornberry spread his hands and said,
"It's for the best, Jordan."
"Is it?" Jordan wondered. But aloud he replied only, "Perhaps it is." And he thought, when faced with a rebellion, join it, so that you can lead it. The Farms. After breakfast, Brandon returned to their apartment, eager to talk with Elise back on the ship.